The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James, and today we're going to be discussing Huddersfield 1, checks notes, Fulham 5 at the John Smith Stadium. Back at away games, and what a way to mark it after 18 months since that game at Bristol City when the pandemic came in and we were banished from away grounds and kind of any ground ever since. And then to go up to West Yorkshire and score 5 in Marco Silva's second game, breaking records all over the shop yesterday. I believe it was our biggest away win since 1999. Incredible scenes yesterday up in West Yorkshire. We're going to be discussing all of that and, of course, all aboard. HMS Piss the League is underway. Am I getting carried away just a little bit? And here on the podcast today is Lydia Campbell.
Hi, guys.
My fellow shipmate, Don Betts.
Hello, hello.
And my first captain, Joe Sansom.
Hey, guys.
Lydia, I forgot to give you a ship. What ship title can I give you?
Oh my word! I mean, can I just say I wasn't expecting that horn, so that was terrifying. But we'll go with it.
You'll all be delighted to hear that I've got a new bit of podcasting equipment, which gives me sound effects. I can do anything. I can go. Oh, that's a rubbish one. What else can I do?
Quite like that.
All sorts. Bit of an applause whenever someone makes a great point. So
Sammy's
all
just getting really
today.
Carried away with the hotkeys here. He's just like, yeah. What can I play now?
What can I play next? Okay, right, I'm getting a bit ahead of myself. Let's do some three-word views from yesterday's game. Lydia, you've been taking a look.
Yeah, I have. I've stuck with Twitter purely because there was so many absolute golden ones. A lot of people sort of reminiscing about the Parker Ball days, but in a very positive way, in that we're not there anymore. Jacob Krupa with long live Silver Ball, quite like that. A lot of Parker Ball is gone and Parker Ball is dead, things like that, which I think we're all very glad about. So there was quite a lot of that. We have RB31 with Mitro's mishap miracle. We do love a little bit of alliteration here. So I enjoyed that a lot. Swinsorian, I think.
I've heard of him.
Fun again, Fulham, which, yeah, I think we can all agree yesterday was super fun. Pavel Kondov with Huddersfield of Dreams. Enjoyed that. And Elizabeth with Cavaliero Comeback King, which I think is spot on. The poor guy got a lot of stick last year, but that was absolutely marvellous. We did also get a lot of tributes to that infamous Brentford poster from the other night. So Lenny has electric, exciting, exceptional.
Exceptional.
Exactly. So there was quite a bit of that as well. But yeah, so there's that. You know what? It's great doing something like three-word review on a day like today because we're all just so happy. It's great.
We are indeed. I feel like I haven't seen the Fulham fan base this buoyant. I guess maybe the Brentford win. Even then, though, it was kind of tinged with maybe the dread of the Premier League, and also it was just a bit of a shithouse way to go up. I haven't seen, I think maybe the 4-0 against Millwall. Joe, I'll come to you on this one first, actually. Just sum up the mood after that win yesterday. As I mentioned at the top, records broken left, right and centre, and a real feel-good factor back at Fulham.
I think that's it, yeah, feel good. I mean, it was so nice that even with the red card, as soon as that happened, Silva, you know, throw on another attacker, let's get the next goal, we're better than you, we're going to beat you with 10 men, was the sort of attitude. And I felt by watching the highlights of Scott Parker's Bournemouth yesterday, it definitely felt a bit like, here's what you could have won, or, well, here's what you could have lost, because that seemed dreadful. They went down to 10 men, they grinded it out, to be fair to them, at Nottingham Forest, brought on an extra defender immediately after going down to 10 men, and Silva just thought, no, let's get at them. And it was such a great feeling watching goal after goal. And every time we came forward, we looked dangerous. And I haven't felt like that for a long time, even in the Championship. to be completely honest, one of the last times I felt like that was against Huddersfield in the first half when we beat them 3-2 in the season. We went up under Parker for the first half an hour. We were very good. But, I mean, every player seems to be playing with confidence, and it's so good to see players, some of them coming back into the fold, playing with a smile on their face, because at the end of the day, football is meant to be fun. And I feel like even with some of the good results we got over the last couple of years, it was never that fun to watch, maybe with the exception of that Millwall game, as you said. And I think this is what it's all about. And I hope there's many more games like this coming up this season.
So, Dom, away days are back. Obviously, you are the chief of away days here at Fulhamish. So explain the day. Did you get stuck in a random pub in Huddersfield? Did you get lost in a taxi on your way home? Sum up the day from start to finish.
Well, boarded that 7:33 train, I think it was, from King's Cross. Getting into Huddersfield before 10:30 in the morning is a...
Wonderful. What were the drinks on the train?
A bottle of Mad Dog for anyone who knows what that is, or for those who live in England, MD 2020. A bottle of Mad Dog on the train up. That was the amount of looks I got for drinking that on a train at like 8 in the morning was a delight. I've missed those looks. Changed over in Leeds. It was chaos anyway because they had fucking Man United in 12:30. So it was chaos just entirety in Yorkshire yesterday. Because obviously the train from Leeds to Huddersfield was obviously going up to Manchester Piccadilly. So there was loads of Leeds fans getting on that train as well. It just was so good just to like feel like it was a normal day back. It was so nice to be annoying random people in a northern town who were clearly despising any action that I caused in Huddersfield. But no, it was great. Spent 2 hours in one of the local Wetherspoons in Huddersfield before.
What's it called?
The Lord Wilson. What a place.
Lord Wilson.
Before heading across to Magic Rock Brewery, because if you're going to Huddersfield, you've got to go to Magic Rock. I mean, it's
apparently it's very good in there.
It is very good. They have street food outside. Obviously, loads of craft beers on tap, and it was great. And then obviously get to the game. Obviously, it wouldn't be Fulham without the ticket office being, you know, somewhat of a shambles. I think there was people who needed to collect their tickets, which obviously they booked it late and they couldn't deliver on time. Obviously, tickets only came on Monday, and I think they were put on the club coach from Craven Cottage, which ended up getting a punctured tyre on the way up, so they were delayed arriving, and then. I think so I had a couple of mates who needed to go get a ticket from obviously the ticket office, but it wasn't like an away ticket office. It was just a generic ticket office. So you had Huddersfield fans trying to get tickets. You had Fulham fans trying to get tickets, one of which was CEO Alistair McIntosh queuing up.
In the queue?
Yeah, he was in the queue. My mate ended up getting a selfie with him.
Extraordinary scenes.
So it was the most Fulham way to come back, and then obviously the game panned out the way it did, and it was obviously seeing so many people again who I haven't seen in, you know, 18 months or so. And yeah, what a way to come back with a 5-1 victory, meeting random people on the train back, making people move carriages off. Away days are back.
Away days are back. And obviously there were 6 goals, Dom. How many did you see?
2.
Brilliant.
strong start.
It's not my fault. There were like 3 goals in 5 minutes, with 5 minutes for half time. Because I think I was in the stand and I said, all right, I'll wait till 35 to go for a pint. It got to like 31. I was like, nah, going on now. But there must have been so many people who missed 3 goals. I mean, Joe was saying he wasn't even at the game and still missed 3 of the goals.
Yeah, to be fair, the goals did happen very quickly. I was watching it and nearly
missed
them.
It was so
hard
to try and work out what was going on because there's no screens in the concourse or anything. And you can like briefly see sort of through, but like we were like, what on earth is going on?
Lydia, you were also at the game. How many of the 6 goals did you see?
Well, I would like to say 6, but to be honest, I mean, did anybody see our second goal?
I don't think so. To be fair.
No, I don't think anyone did.
I mean, I've never seen so much confusion in a football stadium before. There was people just all around me just with their arms in their air going, what has just happened? When it first happened, I thought the referee had pointed to the penalty spot. That's why I thought the Fulham fans were happy. And I was like, I've no idea what's happened. The other side of the pitch, I've no glasses on, which is a rookie mistake. I had not a clue. And then it was only whenever they actually updated the scoreboard. It was absolutely bonkers. No, and you know what? It was actually quite a well-taken goal. So yeah. I think it kind of deserved a bit of acknowledgement. But no, we had absolutely no idea that it had happened.
And speaking of goals that we can't explain, let's come on then to goal number one. And it's like an oil painting. It could be sold in the Louvre and it would be there for years and years. Right, I'll break this down. First of all, you've got the Huddersfield player who's so desperate not to give away a throw-in on his own halfway line that he backpasses it, best part of 60 yards to his goalkeeper. It could have gone anywhere. That could have gone in the net, first of all. And then you've got Schofield, the Huddersfield goalkeeper, desperate not to give away a corner, so tries to inexplicably control a really, really difficult ball. The ball 100% goes out. As Dom said before we start this podcast, he's nearly by the advertising hoardings. He then messes up the clearance so much so that it falls towards Mitrovic. Mitrovic is so shocked that it's coming towards him that he slips. It hits his arm and then it somehow loops off his arm into the net. The keeper gets close, but not close enough. I mean, I was just there at home going like, what have I just witnessed?
Yeah, but the worst thing about it, right, is when you mention about it being halfway to the advertising hoardings, is it came on the screens in the ground.
Okay.
So everyone's watching it back, and I was like, well, that's about 5 yards off the pitch. Like, how on earth has that been given? But I was like, if you want to welcome back to the championship, I think that goal is the absolute welcome back.
See, you say that was the worst moment. I actually thought that was the best moment. That was
I was just stood there, looking back at the screen behind me, just laughing. I was like, how on earth has that been given?
Huddersfield fans went absolutely nuts. And it was glorious. Absolutely glorious.
I mean, Joe, have you ever seen anything quite like it? I mean, we put something out on Twitter like saying, have you seen kind of like a worse, weirder Fulham goal? I'm sure there are some out there. A couple of people wanted to mention like the Kevin McDonald one that at Barnsley was up there of being a bit of a scrappy goal. But at least like we were intending for that to go in the net. This was just out of this world.
This was just chaos. I mean, it's just one of my favourite goals ever. By far. And then the fact that Mitrovic does a full-on celebration right in front of the Huddersfield fans. I saw Wilson winding them up as well. Just pure chaos. It's great to be back. And I don't care how we score. If we score 100 more of those, I'm all for it. And I think what you guys are saying about it coming on in the ground, I think just makes it even better. Because if I was a Huddersfield fan, I'd be absolutely furious. And to me, that just fuels the chaos. Brilliant.
Yeah, and obviously we did have a lucky break early in the game where Huddersfield had a goal disallowed. At the time, watching it, couldn't quite work it out. I'm sure you guys were the same. In hindsight, though, a very, very good decision from the official because it was offside from Huddersfield. And then Lydia mentioned Josh Onuma made it to Joe, and it was hard to work out what was going on. Jim and Jamie, well, I watched it back on the 90 minutes on the website today, didn't know it had gone in, had absolutely no idea. And they were on the halfway line, guys. So you guys at the Fulham end must have had absolutely no chance. But it's actually a wonderful header from Josh Onuma. Really, really brave.
Yeah, really nice set piece routine as well with the way that Bobby Reid sort of ran to the near post, flicked it on. It's great to see a corner actually coming off in our favour. I mean, it's really nice to see. And I think if you watch it back, the highlights, and you listen to the fans or the lack of noise, because it's about 10 seconds after the goal, I think it's partly because all the players sort of like bundle into Josh Onuma on the floor. And from that far away, you're not going to think that it's a goal. Like, there's no one really going crazy at all. Really bizarre to listen back and just hear like silence from all around the ground.
And obviously it was a bit of a disappointment, Dom, that we went 2-1. But before you knew it, it was 3-1. Obviously, you were in the bar by this point. But a lovely bit of play from Decca Dover-Reed. Neat finish as well from Fabio Carvalho. I guess this is probably the moment that we should give Bobby Reed some credit, because three assists, only slightly bettered by Paul Pogba up the road, who got four yesterday. It was a wonderful performance from Bobby, and that was typified his game, really, the work that he put in to set up Carvalho. I assume you've seen the goal back.
Yeah, no. I've watched him back. It's obviously cut back, great finish from Carvalho into the back of the net. And it's, I think Bobby Reed lot this week sort of showed what we were missing last week. I think when you look at our performance against Middlesbrough, I say we did obviously finish 1-1, which people are annoyed about, but we didn't play badly in the game. There wasn't sort of that decisiveness in the final third, or there was, if Cabana was going down the line, there wasn't that, the final ball was the one that was off. You know, I know we had 16, 17 shots against Middlesbrough, but I think there was only three or four that were on target. And I think Bobby Reed yesterday was just making the right decisions at the right time. And I think that's what we've really been missing. And I think Bobby Decca Dover-Reed last season, obviously, did he end up finishing on top goal scorer in the end? I'm not 100% sure.
But
I think he's really come into his own, because I think his first season at Fulham was, obviously everyone remembers that amazing goal at Huddersfield at home, but I think there was sort of a time where people were like, oh, I don't know if Bobby Reed should start. I don't know if he's a backup to Mitrovic, or if he's someone who can play in behind him, or obviously out wide left or out wide right. But I think yesterday showed that, especially in the Championship, what he can offer. We saw it that season at Bristol City, where he was one of the top goal scorers in the league behind Mitrovic at that point. And it was just like, I think Bobby Reed yesterday showed why he needs to start. And I think, and it's a great finish from Carvalho. People talk about the Bobby Reed free assist, but it's a great finish from Carvalho, because he can easily hit that and it could go straight into the keeper. But yeah, he places it so well into the back of the net that it was an absolutely wonderful finish. But yeah, those three goals in 5 minutes, trying to watch it from the concourse with no screen, was one of the most confusing 5 minutes. I think everyone was like, what's actually going on here?
What's the score?
Yeah, what's the score? What is going on? But because it's not like it was an empty court. Like, there was a fair few people in the corners. But it's like, does anyone know what's going on in the game? Because obviously the second goal is, usually if there's a goal, you can gather what's going on by the celebrations. But because the second goal was so not really celebrated, everyone was so confused at the time. And obviously Huddersfield came back into the game. And then obviously Cavani then goes and scored. And I was like, so is that 3-1 now? Like, Can we confirm it's now 3-1?
Can someone tell me what the score is round here, please? For God's sake, I'm trying to get a beer. Lydia, we went into the second half, and I think by that point, Huddersfield were just trying to get their way back into the game, but getting more and more frustrated. The game was getting dirtier and dirtier, and Carvalho particularly was getting some real rough treatment from the Huddersfield players, who were getting more and more frustrated, and really the only way they knew how to deal with him was by taking him out. One of them, by the way, was a full-on like Chiellini on Saka, just grabbed him by the back of the shirt. But it all culminated in Harry Wilson's red card. I thought that I don't see it being rescinded, put it that way. I feel it's harsh on Harry. I think that I understand his reaction, but in my opinion, he gave the referee a decision to make. But I don't know if you disagree.
No, I think you're spot on there, to be honest. I mean, at the time, again, I couldn't see what it was for. I kind of saw the referee and the fourth official having a chat. And honestly, I thought they were deciding whether to send the Huddersfield player off or not. Yeah. I mean, that now part of that is because, again, we were a wee bit away from it. It was down like pretty much in my eye line, but it was still too far away to really, really see any details. I thought the tackle was fairly ropey. But if you raise your leg, if you flick out at all, even if the Huddersfield player 100% made a meal of it, and there was another player as well, I can't remember, possibly Dwayne Holmes, I'm not sure, was right over to the referee and pointing at him and, you know, in his face a little bit. But we can't really complain, I think. And I think Harry will go back and look at that and think, well, actually, yeah, as you say, I've given the referee a decision to make. And if you do that, you are essentially in the wrong. I do think he was a bit hard done by, because it was a terrible tackle on him. But as I say, you can't, in this day and age, you just can't flick out. It happened so close to the fourth official as well. Mm-hmm. It was right beside the Huddersfield dugout. who they're obviously going to go nuts. And there is always going to be a little bit of home crowd pressure, which obviously we didn't have in the last maybe year and a half. So referees, you know, it's going to happen. But as you say, I do think it's his own fault for flicking out.
I mean, I must admit, Joe, I was quite impressed that the referee or the four officials saw it. It was very, like, it wasn't an absolute stamp from Harry Wilson. It was a flick of the legs. It was in a melee of a challenge. In real time, I did not see that. It's one of those that you'd expect to be given by VAR, but obviously it wasn't. It was actually seen. So I was almost reasonably impressed with the officials. I wasn't impressed with the officials that they didn't give any punishment to Cowlin for scything him down. But yeah, it was a hell of a spot.
Yeah, completely. It took me a few watches to actually understand what even happened. I mean, I don't know who spotted it, if it was the linesman. I presume it was, or maybe the fourth official even, because it was right by the dugouts, as you say, Lydia. It's a really annoying one because, as you say, I think it would have been given by VAR. And I think it's more naive from Wilson. If anything, you just, you know, if that happens, don't react. And the best case scenario is that the Huddersfield player gets sent off and that's it, game over. The worst case scenario is they at least get a booking or something. You know, you're not going to get punished. You've just been fouled. Just don't react. But frustrating one. Don't think it's as clear a red as I've seen some say, but like you say, I don't think it's going to get rescinded because he has moved his foot out. And whether it was deliberately lashing out or not, he's given the referee a decision to make.
Yeah, so we'll miss him for the Millwall game, then the Hull game, and the Birmingham City in the Cup game, which I imagine Harry will be gutted to miss out on a second round Carabao Cup tie up to Birmingham. He'll be gutted to not get to go to St Andrews for that one. And Dom, at that point, I guess you could have been concerned for Fulham that we might surrender, or like Huddersfield might get a goal, get back into it, make it really nervy. But we kind of alluded it to it at the beginning. That is not what happened. And the substitutions that Marco Silva then made were fantastic. And within minutes, Cavallero had made it four.
Yeah. When Harry Wilson gets the red card, and as Joe said, I think it's debatable, but he's given the referee a decision to make. So that's what happened there. And obviously then, obviously you said Cavallero making it four, but I was like, surely we're not doing this. We've been battering them all day. They've looked terrible all day. I was like, surely we're not going to go down 10 men, let them back into the game. But you couldn't really tell we were down to 10 men, to be perfectly frank. Cavallero comes on. It seems to be one of his favourite grounds to perform at in a Fulham shirt. When it comes to Cavallero and Huddersfield, obviously scored that screamer last season, two seasons ago, to give us the 2-1 win. And obviously he scored two yesterday, which we'll get onto with the fifth as well. But yeah, great stuff from Cavallero. And I think you kind of alluded to earlier, Sammy, that Cavallero, I think from his perspective, really feels like he's got a point to prove this season. In regard to, obviously, last season, I know he played that false nine role in certain stages. For example, when we got the point away at Spurs, and you know that was probably the best when he played. Obviously, scored that header to get the equaliser. But I really enjoyed Cavallero coming on yesterday and wanting to prove a point. And you know, I think he needs that sort of fire in his belly to do stuff. But as I said, you really could not tell that we went down to 10 men yesterday. And it was great to see someone like Marco Silva, I suppose, probably a decision that Scott Parker would have made. He would probably have brought on a more defensive-minded player. But the substitutions that he was making was like, no, we're going to go for this. We can smell blood. We know this Huddersfield team all day today have looked very, very poor. And obviously, they only drew with Derby last week. So I think they from Huddersfield perspective, they're probably looking at we could end up going down this season. And I think, yeah, Marcus Miller smelt blood and went for it, and his tactical plan worked.
Yeah, I guess, Lydia, is that something that we need to keep in mind, that Huddersfield did look awful? Ryan Schofield in goal was atrocious, and there were several poor performances all over the pitch from Huddersfield yesterday. They drew with Derby on the opening day. I really fear for them. I really fear for them. You watched that performance yesterday and they look like prime relegation material. Whilst it's great, we won 5-1, we should all be excited. You don't score five away from home like that very often. We have to put into perspective this whole kind of HMS Piss the League.
Yeah. Look, I think we can be excited without getting overexcited. Do you know what I mean? We can, as you say, it's all well and good, you know, us beating Huddersfield because, I mean, they were dreadful. But they're still not going to, well, hopefully for their sake, not going to concede five goals at home every other week. What I would say is I was more impressed.
I really hope not. That would be
yeah, I mean, that would be horrific. Bless them. A good mate of mine in work is a Huddersfield fan, and he has said to me all week, you're going to absolutely batter us. You know, you're going to batter us. There's absolutely no, and I'm sort of thinking, well, you know, we might be better than you, but we're Fulham. So, well, yeah. You know, we do dreadful things from time to time. So I think it's about looking at what was good about yesterday and what was different to the past couple of seasons, with how we handled those moments like Huddersfield getting a goal back, that could have had a really bad impact in the team, because you go from 2-0 up approaching half time to 2-1. They get a halftime team talk with their, you know, as in if we'd hadn't scored that third goal, they go in at halftime and their manager can be like, look, you know, we've got a goal back, like, you know, this is in our hands, blah, 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 blah. So that third goal was probably the most important in the match, in my mind, because of how we responded to something that could have been possibly very problematic. And I think we can acknowledge that Huddersfield were awful, but also think, well, do you know what, actually, though, we still handled those situations very, very well. And as I just said a minute ago, you know, you would like to think that Huddersfield still aren't going to concede five at home at every game. So there has to be some praise for the boys in that respect.
Yeah, Joe, your just general feelings, top of the league, but as you say, two games in, it's heady days. We are excited. I guess Millwall on Tuesday may be a better litmus test as to where this team is.
Yeah, I think so. I think Millwall's always a good game to find out where you are. You know, they really sort of sum up the Championship a bit like Middlesbrough do, a big physical team, especially going away from home. It's going to be a bit different. But yeah, you know, Huddersfield, looking at the win itself, you can only beat who's in front of you. But I think the most important thing is the way we did it. I mean, you know, if we'd have beaten Huddersfield 1-0, I'd still be over the moon. You know, it's a good start to the season, but it's the way we've done it and the way we did it with 10 men. I know we didn't have 10 men for long, but when we did, we scored two more goals. And I think, would West Brom have done that? Would Sheffield United have done that? Would Bournemouth have done that? And at this stage of the season, I don't think they would. And that's what's important, because when early days, Silver's had a bit of a disjointed three-week period to sort of get the team ready. Then we've had the Middlesbrough game. Now we've had the Huddersfield game and we're sitting top of the league. And I know it's so early days. There's literally 44 games left. But great start. And Millwall, I'm so glad the game comes around quickly, because there's no better feeling than playing another game when you're in this good form.
Yeah, 100%. All right, we've got loads of questions to get into, so we'll get tucked into those after this. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy here with Lydia Campbell.
Good evening.
Dom Betts.
Hello, hello.
And Joe Sansom.
Hey, guys.
All right, let's get into some questions. Mixture of Twitter and Instagram today. Joe, I'll go to you on this first one because it's a transfer rumour, and I know that you love your transfer rumours. In the Fulhamish group, Joe is always first to post the links.
And yeah, some of them are a bit dodgy, I've got to say, like some random guy from like the Persian fourth division that we're definitely not signing, but yeah.
What's the bloke in Brazil who I swear you're tweeting on a pretty much daily basis?
Mr. Muniz, yeah, Mr. Muniz.
No, I know him, but who's your man?
Vene, oh yeah, he's...
That's a grande.
He is by far one of the best reporters I've ever seen. I mean, I think someone put in the group the other day, does he live with Muniz? Because some of these updates are very, very specific. Like he was even following him to the airport, but... if I recommend giving him a follow because it sounds like Muniz is having an isolation period now. So get your latest info from him, and I guess Peter Rutzler will tweet it as well.
Yeah, I mean the fact that he videoed Muniz going up the stairs on the escalator in the airport, I was like, what kind of access do you have to this bloke? Jesus. Like, he's probably gonna be his next time he'll be tweeting, oh, he's having pasta for dinner. It's lovely. He's got some chorizo and some cheese in there.
I hope he's good with this level of coverage, because honestly, I saw more about Muniz than I have about Messi in terms of going to Paris.
Rydell Fabian asks, Joe, Bruno Pez to Fulham, which is an incoming transfer rumour. Do you know much about this one?
I literally had a look at this morning, and apparently he's a defensive midfielder from Sporting B. So effectively that's like playing in the under-23s. I think he is 23. I literally had like a 5-minute research of him, but I mean, it's another interesting rumour because it's another player from the Portuguese league, and it seems like it would suggest that that's something that Silva's looking at. I know he's got links to Sporting. I think we need another body minimum in midfield, and definitely someone to cover Reed, because as well as we played yesterday, and I'm sure we'll come on to our midfield, Seri stepping back in and doing a great job, I definitely think it's an area we need to address and be a bit stronger. I'm all for an incoming. I hope he's good. I can't say I know too much about him or I've ever seen him, but a defensive midfielder is always going to be good news for me, I think.
Yeah. Okay, next question, Lydia, from Mitchell FFC on Instagram. Could Seri earn a starting role if he stays? We haven't talked about Seri's performance yet yesterday. I thought it was, 8% impressive. I thought it was good. I thought it was a couple of moments that he clearly showed that he hasn't played football in best part of 2 years. There was one, I think it's midway through the second half, where he just like dallied on the ball so much. Someone needed to shout man on at him. And he just got completely dispossessed because he wanted to have about 30 seconds to size up what he wanted to do next. But overall, I thought it was a good display from Seri, and I thought it showed the touch of class that he could bring to this midfield.
Yeah, I mean, look, we never know about Frank Zambo Anguissa or Jean-Michel Mikel's Seri. It's been this way for the past couple of transfer windows. Will they stay? Will they not? I would say that if he's still here and he keeps doing what he did yesterday, then yeah, he deserves that shirt for me until he loses it or someone else, you know, maybe betters him in training. I would say there was a couple of moments yesterday in the first half I found him a little bit, I'm not too sure about this. Because as you say, he was dallying a little bit on the ball. I was having, you know, flashbacks to the Man City away game, our first year back in the Premier League, when he gave the ball away in the middle of the pitch and they just came and scored. I was having flashbacks of that. Thankfully, the Huddersfield players are not quite as good as Man City's, they didn't capitalise on that. But against better players, you might struggle. But I think he really grew into the game, and you know, as an away fan there yesterday, there seemed to be a lot of love for the fans from him. He seemed really happy, applauding us, came over at the end, chucked a shirt in. He looked happy. He looked really happy, which I wasn't sure he was. So I think if he does keep turning performances like that, then I would say, yeah, absolutely, give him the opportunity. But look, time will tell. It really is an absolute mystery whether he'll still be a Fulham player by the end of the window.
I mean, Dom, Stasi asks, can we convince Anguissa to stay? Do we want him to? It was interesting to see him suddenly come off the bench again after Marco Silva said he won't play people that he doesn't believe are committed to the club. Has he suddenly had a change of heart, or did we just not have that much depth in midfield?
Yeah, I think if you look at the depth, especially with the Reid injury, you've got Anguissa and Tyrese Francois. And that's your depth behind Onuma and obviously Seri. And I do find it interesting, actually, that the trust that Marcus Silva is actually putting in Josh Onuma, because people weren't too sure about him going into the season, is what I could gather. You know, as people saying, oh, could he potentially be going out on loan to another championship team? Because, you know, obviously he didn't really play a part last season. I know he had his injury at the start of the season, and there was obviously when he wasn't registered in the Premier League squad. But no, I think Anguissa, for me, I just don't. He doesn't want to be here. I don't think he's really ever wanted to be here, if I'm being perfectly honest. I know, obviously, he joined us for 30 odd million from Marseille when he joined. But even I've never really felt. I don't think I felt about Seri, to be fair, but I've never really felt that Anguissa has wanted to be at Fulham. He came here because we offered him we offered Marseille so much money, and from people who reported in France, saying Marseille was like, why on earth Fulham offered this much money for a player who was very poor in their Europa League final defeat back in, was it, would have been 20, what was it, 2018, 2019. So when it comes, I think Anguissa is going to go. I think it will come to a point by the end of the window where if it's not a permanent transfer, Tony Khan will probably try and get whoever in abroad, whether it's in Italy or Spain or wherever, will try and get them to pay most of his wages, because he's probably one of the highest, most paid players on a wage bottom. And I think him and Sarri are probably still on Premier League money. So they're probably on, you know, not maybe, they won't be on over 100k a week, but they'll probably be on, you know, 60-70k a week. And I think Tony Khan is just trying to, when it comes to financial fair play, if you look at what's rumoured, as Joe will know, with the Muniz deal, it's about us playing sort of half this year, half next year. So I don't think Anguissa is going to stay, but I'm very interested to see what happens with John Mikel Seri, because what happens when Harrison Reid comes back? Is he going to play a double pivot of Reid and Seri, or is he going, with the trust he's put in Josh Onuma in these opening couple of games, is he going to look for the Reid Onuma pivot there? But said, if you're going off yesterday's game, I don't think Seri set the world alight, but I think he did play well. So it's interesting what happens to him. But when it comes to Anguissa, I think his time at Fulham's pretty much come to an end.
Yeah, I mean, if Seri stays, Joe, I mean, you've got to wonder where Matt Grimes like fits into this team, because you're going to have, I mean, obviously at the moment, I imagine Matt Grimes would do a great job because we've got Reid injured. And I know that Grimes doesn't quite play exactly the same role that Reid does, but you're going to have Reid in there, Onuma, Seri. I mean, especially if you somehow hang on to Anguissa, as unlikely as that is, with Tyrese Francois in there as well. I just don't, you've got to ask the question, is like, do you need Matt Grimes? Is he going to fit into the squad?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need one more midfielder if Anguissa goes, even if he doesn't. But then if Seri stays, I think that negates the need for two. I think that would be too many wages sitting on the bench, not playing every week. I know we've got to rotate in a championship Saturday, Tuesday games schedule, but you know, if we then have Reid when he comes back, Kearney when he comes back, Onuma, Seri, Francois as well. I mean, we're looking like we can only play two of them, and then one in the 10, which has been Carvalho recently, but that might end up being Kearney. At this rate, I actually hope it's Carvalho. I think he's been brilliant. But I think if Seri stays, I think we only need one more midfielder, and that's someone to cover Reid when he's out, that's maybe a bit more defensive. You know, Reid's had injury problems ever since we signed him. He missed a lot of the 19-20 season. He missed a chunk of last season as well, especially at the end of it. And that's, I don't think that's a coincidence that that's when it all really fell apart again. And so I agree with you. Yeah, I think if Seri stays, that sort of is the catalyst for how many midfielders we need to get. I assume Anguissa still goes. And the reason that he was involved was, as Dom said, squad depth. Also, the fact that Kamara was on the bench last week against Middlesbrough, wasn't this week, is rumoured to be off. We had to have someone else on the bench, and I think that Anguissa might have just been the next man in line. So It's an interesting one, but I think that Serie is the big decisive action into how many more players we actually need.
Yeah, exactly. And because Grimes, as far as I've seen of him, is not a Harrison Reed direct replacement.
Yeah, from talking to Swansea fans when we were like heavily linked, he apparently plays in front of their back four, but he's more of a like deep lying playmaker rather than like a full on defensive, I'm going to stop you playing midfielder. Obviously, he's their captain, so they're not going to want to lose him. And it sounds as if the deal was nowhere near where a lot of people were saying it was in the first place. But I still think he'd be a good signing, but certainly not one we need if we're not going to lose Seri and if we're already going to be bringing in someone else.
Yeah. Speaking of Carvalho, Lydia, Connor Raines says, how does Carvalho's ceiling compare to Sessegnon's and Harvey Elliott's? I mean, how far he's come in what effectively has been 5 to 6 matches, really. He came in for that game against Southampton. We were like, oh, nice, we're playing one of the youngsters. And suddenly, 2 games into the championship, he's our starting 10. Scored his goal yesterday. I know he scored in the Premier League, so it's not a first goal for Carvalho, but kind of the first goal since he's had this central role. We've got to be excited. It's such a shame that we kind of have our excitement at the moment tempered by this whole contract debate. Marcus Silva did talk about the contract debate, interestingly, in the press conference. Peter Rutzler tweeted saying that effectively Marcus Silva just said it's very important that we get him a contract, which didn't really tell us much either way. I could have told Marco that as well. But anyway, back to the question, Lydia. Connor Raines says, how does Carvalho's ceiling compare to Sessegnon and Harvey Elliott's?
I mean, look, the three of them are all quite different players. Sess, I think, you know, what age is Fab again? Is he 19 or so? Yeah, so I think one of the things is obviously that he's come in a little bit later than the likes of the other two. You know, Harvey Elliott was ridiculously young when he made his debut for us and then was straight off to Liverpool. And I think with Harvey Elliott, it seems to be, they think he's a bit of a generational talent. So which could still be true. We don't know yet. I think did he come on yesterday for Liverpool? I think he might have.
He did, yeah.
So you know, he hasn't been shipped out on loan yet. They'll have plenty of European games. You might find that Harvey Elliott is playing Champions League football this year. Sess obviously did ridiculous things for us and then has kind of hit a bit of a brick wall, unfortunately, at Spurs. So for Fab, I think maybe it's important for him to kind of look at that and say, well, actually, when players have left Fulham, it really does depend on where you go. So who is in form at the minute? You know, is it going to be a team who are just going to ship him out on loan? You know, he's not going to go and be a starting player in the Premier League. He's too new to senior football for that. So what I would say is the ceiling's high. Not sure if we can really compare it to Sess's or Elliott's quite yet. We just have to see how this season pans out. But I think, yeah, it's crucial that we nail him down to a contract. I think the best place for him right now is going to be under Marco Silva, who's had a lot of faith in him so far to put him into a number 10 role in a championship side, who a lot of people are saying are favourites for the league. And so if you're a 19-year-old kid who's played a handful of senior matches, the fact that he's had, or Silva's put his faith in him, I would say the fellas should stay, and he seems to be a very central member of this team. He had quite a few chances yesterday. He also spread the ball very well. I'd say the ceiling's high, but let's keep him and grind him into senior football.
All right. Well, thank you very much for all your questions. Up next, we're going to preview Tuesday's trip to Millwall. Part 3 of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Lydia, Dom and Joe. Right, let's preview Tuesday's trip to Millwall, the first midweeker of the season. I'm dead excited for this one. A trip to the Den. Looks like we've sold the allocation well. I don't know if you either of you know about this problem that's been going on with the Fulham ticket office website today. A lot of people complaining that they couldn't log on, so thought it was sold out. But apparently it isn't sold out. Do you guys know much about this, or am I the only one that's seen this?
I ain't the only one who's seen this, but I think the ticket office has been in shambles all season. to be perfectly frank, like I think they've moved from Ticketmaster to a new sort of way. It's the first time I think you've been able to book a specific seat in an away end since probably first season back down in the Championship, so 14-15. And I think that's just created issues. And I think last week there was an issue where if you used a saved card, the order would say it was processed, but actually it didn't go through. Like, you didn't get an email confirmation, you didn't get any money being taken out of your bank account. And so I think it's just this migration between from the Ticketmaster system to the new one, and it's causing issues. And obviously, and even the ticket for Huddersfield, for example, that arrived was sent in a handwritten letter.
I got a handwritten letter for my Millwall tickets, which is quite a weird thing. There was no stamp on it. I don't know how it got here. I'm still utterly baffled. I haven't quite got to the bottom of it. I saw we all get handwritten letters through the door every once in a while. And I was thinking, oh God, there's going to be like a neighbour complaining about the dog or something like that. I was like, but they've got my address. That's odd. And they've called me Samuel as well, which, like, you wouldn't necessarily know my name was Samuel unless you had my bank card. And yet with my Fulham tickets, I just can't work out how did we just forget? And just
I also just feel sorry for the geezer who's had to handwritten
like 3,000 tickets.
Yeah, like thousands of different envelopes. But yeah, I think the ticket office is just a migration between a system to a new one. It's caused chaos. But hopefully it doesn't mean loads of fans have got to try and queue up and try and collect tickets like it was at Huddersfield, because I mean, there were some people who thought they weren't going to get into the game on time. So.
At least a coach can't break down. There are no coaches to St Millwall.
They'll still find a way of making the tickets delayed.
Oh, okay.
We know how the Fulham ticket office works.
In fairness, I've got the envelope still in front of me, actually. I mean, in fairness to whoever was probably on like envelope number 965 by the time they got to me, it's very neat handwriting. So
instead, they had to do it for Huddersfield as well.
Brutal.
We should compare, Sammy. See if it's the same person.
It'd be barely legible by the time I've got to like 50, let alone I remember doing a couple of like Fulhamish merch things back in the day where I like didn't use a printer, and that was hard enough, and there was only like 10 people that ordered a hat or something. Right, let's come on to the Millwall game. We had a question from FFC Matt Joe, who says, who starts in midfield versus Millwall? Every midfielder who is fit surely in contention.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think it depends quite a lot on whether Reed's back, because if Reed's fit, then I'd personally always play him. But if not, then I'd go with the same two that played against Huddersfield in Seri and Onoma. I know a lot of people say put Anguissa in, but the fact of the matter is I agree with Dom that I don't think Anguissa wants to be here. I want players involved that are going to be here hopefully all season. I feel like we can still convince Seri to stay, and I'm not sure we can with Anguissa, and I don't think you should change a winning team unless you have to. So Reed, for me, and I'm contradicting myself a bit there, I'd put him in because I think he's one of our best players, but if not, then I'd go with the same midfield too.
Lydia, Millwall have had a mixed start to the season. One in the Carabao Cup and then two draws away at QPR, which is not a terrible result, and then at home to Blackburn, both 1-1. People have been tipping Millwall for fairly good things this season, have managed to keep most of their squad together. Gary Rowett is a good manager, so they're going to offer us a much, much sterner test than we got on Saturday, and they'll be very, very keen to kind of get that first win against us on Tuesday. Maybe a bit of a curse in disguise, actually, the fact that they didn't kind of get that monkey off their back against Blackburn on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a very different, very, very different kind of match, really. The other thing is they also have some real quality players, like Sajed Wallace, who started, there was a lot of people thinking that he would be moved away from Millwall. That move hasn't happened yet. I think he's scored a couple of goals already this season. They have a couple of good players in midfield. Know quite a bit about George Saville. Obviously, plays for Northern Ireland as well. Very tidy midfielder who's going to properly hassle in there. And we need to be aware of that. What I do think is that if we can play with the same sort of intensity as we did yesterday, I'd be super pleased with that. What I would say is that we need to be better And I'm hoping Silva's kind of looked at this already. It's only early days in the season, but we do not look very good from set pieces, defensively, I mean. And I think Millwall are more likely to capitalise on that than a Millwall or than a Huddersfield. And Huddersfield did twice, you know, just what one thankfully was ruled out. But what I would say is Millwall will also be more tactically astute, I would say. Going to the Den and is never a good place to go to, really, let's be honest. It's not an easy away day. Their fans will be loud, they'll be intimidating, and we need to be on the ball from the beginning, high press kind of thing. I would say that this one is much better to be able to tell of how we are as a team than the Huddersfield and even the Middlesbrough games. So I think there's going to be a lot of learning about ourselves on Tuesday night.
Yeah, indeed. All right. One final question here from Alex Pure Power. He says, the football this season has been electric so far. Early predictions for our final goal tally. Also, fun fact, we scored over 25% of last season's away goals tally, 18 already. Thank you very much, Alex, for that. So I'm going to put the betting out there and you can all buy a pint or get a pint bought for you if you get it right. So for context, in 17-18, which I would say was a fairly high scoring season for Fulham in the Championship, we scored 79 goals. We have 6 already in 2 games. So Lydia, I will start with you. Stick a number in the air and we'll see at the end of the season if you get it right. How many goals will we get this season?
Oh, okay. I'm going to go for an improvement. I'm going to say 85.
85. Yeah, that's 85, that's not bad. That's still like under 2 a game, actually. So, you know, that's that's a pretty conservative,
yeah, I'm being grounded.
Dom?
102.
102, my God.
We're top of the league and we're not leaving that place for the rest of the season.
Joe?
I was going to go 100, so I'll stick with 100. I think, I mean, if Mitrovic looks like he's going to get about 50, so I think the others will chip in with about 50 as well.
Good grief. I now feel very pessimistic.
No, Liz. I think you're actually pretty spot on.
You'll be a lot closer,
on.
Liz, don't worry.
I was going to say 85 lids, so you've time to take my answers. I'll say 90 to be conservative, but we scored 90 goals. I think we're getting top two.
I thought you might go proper guessy attendance there with Rushton and Barry by going 84 or 86.
Yeah, no, I could have done that. I very much could have done that, but I'm not that desperate to get bought a pint, although I wouldn't say no. Well, thank you very much for listening today. We'll see what happens on Tuesday at Millwall. If you're going, enjoy the game. See you there potentially. It's going to be really nice to be back at an away day. I was gutted I didn't go to Huddersfield yesterday. I was already gutted before the game, thinking, oh, I'd really love to be going to Huddersfield. And then afterwards, extra gutted, I think is definitely the phrase.
So if we lose on Tuesday, it's your fault, Sammy. Yeah.
Tweet me earlier and say, Sammy, you know, you had that curse against us in last season whenever I did a podcast, we didn't win. So yeah, if we don't win on Tuesday, I could really do without another curse this season. Surely this season of all seasons, I can avoid a curse. Please, the love of God. Before we finish, actually, Lydia, we need to name the podcast. So what are you going for?
Do you know what? Just because it was so ridiculous, I'm going for RB31's Mitro's Mishap Miracle, because it was the fun that sparked that game into life yesterday. So let's go for that.
And a goal tally of 1 for the season for Mitro. So
we've got to
be happy with that. Lydia, thank you very much.
No worries. It's been a pleasure.
Dom, thank you.
No worries.
I particularly enjoyed the extremely detailed away day breakdown at the beginning of the podcast, right to ticket office problems, Leeds station. You know, you really got into
Leeds station Weatherspoons. It was interesting.
You got into the nitty gritty of it, and it's what we've missed. And Joe Sanson, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sammy.
Back to transfer watch for Joe.
Straight on the phone, straight on the bird app.
scouring news now for the latest information.
Yeah, Samson, straight on the blower to Fabrizio Romano. What's happening with Moonies?
Yeah. get on the phone to Vene, see what Mooney's is having for tea, please. All right, thank you very much for listening today. We'll go again on Tuesday. Colin Whites.